Now we're holding the last words of Ayin Tes Amud Beis. We started talking about in the Mishnah a case where various cases where a person comes back to town where we know he was a miyuchas, he was a kohen, for example, and he comes back saying with a wife and children, and we had various possibilities. There can be that he's saying, this is the wife that I first left with, and these are her children. He can say that my wife, which I left with, passed away, and these are her children. We can have, he says, he married a wife outside the country, and these are her children. Or we had that he says, I married a wife, she passed away, and these are her children. And in the Mishnah, we talked about the various possibilities when he needs to bring proof about each one of them. The basic idea being, the wife, if he took her with him from here, then he doesn't need to bring a proof now that she was a miyucheses, because that was already checked out when he first married her. As opposed to and the children, it all depend. We said provided that kruchin achareha, that they're attached to her. And then we said where we know that the wife was kosher, then we assume the children are kosher as well, because kruchin achareha. But if not, then we may have to bring a proof about them. And sometimes we may even have to bring a proof about the wife herself if he married her in another country and we don't know whether the proper investigation was done. So now the Gemara says on this, Omer Ish Lakish Lo Shonu Ela B'Kodshei Gvul. All of this that we're talking about, we say that the children are kruchim, and therefore we can assume that once we know the mother's status, then automatically we know the kid's status. That would only apply to Kodshei Gvul, only that by virtue of that, they're able to eat truma, which is, truma is called Kodshei Gvul, meaning the kodshim of the borders, in the sense because you can eat them throughout, you can eat truma throughout the borders of Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to kodshim in the Beis Hamikdash or to serve in the Beis Hamikdash or whatever. There you need something more than that. There you need something more than chazaka. Here, basically, what it is you have a chazaka. They're kruchim achareha. Therefore, whatever their mother's status is what they are. But to go so far, avol yuchsin. But when it comes to saying that they're koyanim miyuchasim, and therefore to say that they can serve in the Beis Hamikdash, to say that in future generations you have, once you trace back to them, then you know that then you know you have a family of good koyanim miyuchasim. Then Resh Lakish says, "Loy, no, we don't say that that you're going to go that far, because after all, there is only chazaka over here." Tosfos refers to other Gemaras that seem to be saying that it's enough for a person to say, this is my son, and he's a Kohen, and he can eat Truma. And there it doesn't even mention Kruchin Achareha. So one possibility is that Gemara is going according to Rav, and Rav is able to argue with Mishnayis. We do say the expression Rav Tana Hu Poli. But another point is that our Gemara versus that Gemara in Ksubas may be disagreeing on the question of Malin Mitruma LeYuchsin, which we touched on earlier in our Masechta. When you see somebody eating Truma, can you automatically assume on that basis that he's a Miyuchas? And therefore say that he's 100% a Kohen. So Rab over there may be following the opinion that you can't anyway. So therefore, nothing wrong with eating truma because we're not gonna say based on that. People are not gonna say based on that that he's a miyuchas. Whereas here we would be holding according to the opinion that malim the truma the yuchsin. Anyway, that's what Resh Lakish says, that in the case of our Mishnah, then the father comes and says, for example, this is the wife that I first left with here years ago, and now these are her children, and the children are kruch and achareha. Then Resh Lakish is saying that's still not enough to make it that these children should be miyuchasim. Maximum is they can eat truma.
If a Kohen loses his status, by not being able to be verified as miyuchas, does he remain a kohen?
So then he's called a kohen chazaka. We actually talked about that at the beginning of the perek. We said gedolah chazaka. We had those three families of kohenim, bnei chavaya, bnei hakoitz, etc., who were among the Jews who came to Eretz Yisrael at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. They couldn't bring solid proof that they were kohenim. So we said they were allowed to eat truma. We had two opinions over there. Are they allowed to eat truma d'araisa? Or are they maybe only allowed to eat truma d'rabbanon? Yeah, in general, all kohenim nowadays are kohenim chazaka. No kohen nowadays has documentary proof tracing them all the way back to a kohen who served in the Beis Hamikdash, who served in the Sanhedrin, or the various other possibilities that we learned a few days ago of how you can verify 100% that somebody is a kohen. Nobody has that. All kohenim nowadays are kohenim chazaka. when Mashiach comes, as we learned earlier in the Perek, then Mashiach or Eliyahu Navi is going to verify who's actually a Kohen and who's not. Nowadays, there are some families that there's more of a stronger Masorah on them that they're Kohenim. It's said, for example, that the Rappaports have a particular Masorah about that. But other than that, even they are not Kohenim Yichus, they're only Kohenim Chazakah. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Filu B'Yuchsin. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, when the father says over here, this is my wife and these are her children, and the children are Kruchin Achareha, and we have proof about the wife, whether because she originally left here and therefore we know her, and we know that she was vetted before she married him, or where he brings proof that the wife that he married in Minisayam is a Miuchesis. Either way, Rabbi Yochanan says that we're saying that raya is good enough for the children is even good enough for Yuchsin to say that they are definitely Kohen, that they are definitely Kohenim because of the Kruchin Achareva. And the Gemara points out, V'az de Rabbi Yochanan l'taymei. Now Rabbi Yochanan in that is going according to his Svara. The Omer Rabbi Chiba Abba, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Malkin al Chazakus. A person can be given Malkus based on something involving Chazaka. So even though there's no Eidos, we have a chazaka. So, we can have a chazaka. For example, that certain truma is tomei, where a person will be getting malchus then for eating it. So we can do that. We can give malchus based on, even though something was only established based on chazaka, the soklin, the sofen, alpia chazakas. For that matter, also says Rabbi Yochanan, you could even give skila or srefa based on a chazaka, as the Gemara is going to say in a little bit. For example, two people we have a chazaka of them being mother and son or whatever, and there can be missus based in involved if we end up seeing them having relations. So even though we don't have solid proof that this is a mother and that these two are mother and son, nevertheless the chazaka is enough for that purpose. The Gemara, by the way, in Cholin discusses a number of different sources how we know of this concept that chazaka is so strong. The Gemara brings a bunch of possibilities over there. It starts with the fact that we can shecht an animal after all and eat it, even though there's a slight possibility that there was a hole right there in the windpipe or in the esophagus where you shecht it, and now you're not going to be able to show it afterwards. So the Gemara says that's not really a solid proof, but the Gemara ends up bringing a bunch of other proofs over there for the concept that we can rely on chazaka. We see, for example, also in connection with parents, the Torah tells us, for example, that if a person hits his father and wounds him or curses his father, he's chayev misa. Now, after all, you can never know 100% for sure that this person is his father. It's only a chazaka. And nevertheless, we see that a chazaka is strong enough for such purposes. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying, is making the same point over here. However, in sofen truma al chazakas. However, Rabbi Yochanan says when it comes to burning truma, when you have truma that there's a chazaka that it was tomei, but you don't know for sure, you don't have edim, then you can't burn it. Maximum you can do with it is toilim. You suspend it, meaning in other words that you don't eat it, but you don't burn it either. Because after all, there was a mitzvah in the Torah not to burn truma that's tahor. So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan is following his own shitta then in saying that when it comes, that chazaka is such a powerful thing that therefore he can also be saying now that the father has the ability to say, this is my wife, those are her children, and because kruchim achareha, then therefore we can, therefore that chazaka is strong enough to say that yes, these children are indeed hers, and therefore the chazaka for, and therefore the edus for her also goes on her children, even though for her children it's only a chazaka. So the Gemara says, Malkin al Chazakas. Let's explain what Rabbi Yochanan means. What does he mean? We give Malkus based on a Chazaka. So I gave an example before involving Truma, but actually the Gemara gives a better example. Suppose a woman has a Chazaka among her neighbors that she's Nida. Now, women in those times used to wear different clothes when they were Nida. We learned in Ksubas, actually, that a husband has to get his wife new clothes every so often. And he gets her, for example, a new outfit once a year, for example, and then he gets it for her in the winter time. She wears it when it's still new and warm. And then afterwards, when it's worn out and not so warm, then she can use it for summer clothing, and she can also use some of the ones from previous years for Nida clothing. So now, how would a woman's neighbors know that she's a nida? often because she would be wearing such clothes. So if she does, if she wears those clothes, and therefore she has chazaka among her neighbors that she's a nida, and then her husband ignores that and has relations with her, by the loika ala mishum nida, her husband is going to get malchus for the fact that he had relations with a nida. The whole fact that she was a nida was established based only on chazaka, doesn't matter, it's still enough to give him malchus. So Rabbi Yehuda says that in the name of Rab, and therefore that bears out what Rabbi Yehuda just says by himself. So therefore that bears out what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that chazaka, that based on chazaka alone, we can give malchus. Why it is we're mentioning that only the husband gets malchus, what about the wife? There's a number of different explanations. Among them that she got, there are explanations that Amma says, for example, in one of his struggles, sure, she gets malchus also. It always takes two to tango, and since she's also having relations with him, when she's a nida, she should also get malchus, says that Amma. However, the Gemara is not mentioning that, Rabbi Yehuda is not mentioning that, because there's not that much of a chiddush in it. Of course, she was wearing these big nidas, so therefore she demonstrated with that she was a nida. The chiddush is the husband didn't do anything to demonstrate that she's a nida, and still the chazaka is enough to give him malchus. And then there's various other explanations, including the Meiri says that let's say you could have it wasn't necessarily that she knew about it. He could, let's say, come home and she's asleep, and he goes and has relations with her. So then she's not getting malchus, obviously, but he would. So various explanations why the Gemara phrases it like that, by the loika ala, rather than saying shneim loikim or something to that effect.
Isn't it supposed to be private, supposed to hide the fact that she's a nida?
Is she supposed to hide the fact that she's a nida? I mean, she shouldn't go shout it from the rooftops, but practically speaking, especially when women were home all day, it's not something that you could hide, and the normal thing would be that she would wear different clothing when she was a nida.
At home,
at home, we're talking about at home, in the chutz or whatever. Yeah, we're not talking necessarily walking around the street. So we see what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that you can give malchus based on only a chazak. What about Sirkin Besofen al Chazakas, when Rabbi Yochanan says that you could give skill or Srefa, Mrs. Basin, based on Chazaka? So, for example, Kidir Rabba Bar Avuna. To Amar Rabba Bar Avuna, for example, we have what Rabba Bar Avuna says, Ish V'isha Tinek V'tinekas Shehig Dibu B'Seich HaBayis. If you have a man and a woman together with a boy and a girl who all grew together in the house, so everybody assumes that she's his wife and these are her children. Now, we don't have solid edus about it. They came from someplace else. We don't have any solid proof that they're married and that these are her children. Nevertheless, niskol and zalzev and nisraf and zalzev. Nevertheless, there can be skila or srefa given for one to the other. Because if the boy from 9 years old, of course, has relations with the one who's assumed to be the mother, well, then that's an iser skila. If the man has relations with the girl who's assumed to be his daughter, then nisraf and zalzev, then there'll be seifa. For example, as we have the example, Amar Shimon Levi, Amar Shimon Pazi, Amar Shimon Levi, Mishum Bakapara, Maisa Beisha Shabosli Yerushalayim. It happened once that a woman came to Yerushalayim, Tinek Mukav Lak Seifa, with a child riding on her shoulders, so it seemed like this is her son, Vehigdilatu, and sure enough, she raised him as her son. Ubala, then when he got older, he had relations with her. There was Aiden. Now, in all these cases, by the way, we're talking about there is Aiden Vasra for the actual act. There of course, has to be Aiden Vasra for the actual Bia, or for something leading to Bia, in order for there to be Mises based, and no question about that. What we mean is there was no Aiden in the first place that this is a mother and this is a son. For all we knew, that could be, for all we knew, she could have adopted him or something. Nevertheless, they have you in the Basin or Skolim, they brought them to Basin and gave them Skila. Not because they knew 100% that he's her son, but because he was attached to her in the way that as he was growing up, in the way that children are attached to their mothers, and therefore that was enough of a chazaka to say that he is indeed her son. So we see that a chazaka can be used even for Mrs. Bastin. On the other hand, continues Rabbi Yochanan, the ein serfent truma of a chazaka is. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan had said, we don't burn truma based on a chazaka. When we have only a chazaka, that truma is tomei, that's not reason enough to burn it, then sort of that says Rabbi Yochanan. On the other hand, so now, in fact, the Omer of Shimon Lakish Surfin, I'll be out Surfin al Chazakas, Rabbi Yechon Omer ain't Surfin. In fact, you have Machloikas, just like we had before, Machloikas about between Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yechon, about the case of our Mishnah, whether the children are Miuchosim or not, where Rish Lakish said they only have Chazaka, they can only eat Truma, but no more than that. And Rabbi Yochanan said they're actually considered miyuchasim. So also, when it comes to truma, you have a separate machloikas. Whether if you have chazaka, if you have only a chazaka, the truma is tamei. Where the shlokish says that's reason enough to actually burn the truma, and Rabbi Yochanan is saying that not. So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan is being consistent with his shitta in saying that you don't burn truma in a case like that. And the Gemara continues for azdu l'taimayu. Now both Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shlokish are going according to their respective shittas in saying that. The Tanakh, namely like this, we learn in a Mishnah. We learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Taras. Tinik shenimtza b'tzad ha'isa. If you find a child near a batch of dough, the dough was supposed to be tahor. The dough was dough of truma and it has to be kept tahor. Or for that matter, it could even be chulin shenasu al taras hakodesh or taras truma or whatever, and it has to be kept to the standards of tahor. Anyway, now the child has a piece of dough in his hand. The question then would be, did he, so Rashi learns that there's no question he took that piece of dough from the batch. The question then would be, is the child tummy? Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that no, the child was definitely tamei. The question is, did he necessarily take from that dough? Is it possible that somebody else came in here and gave the child a piece of the dough? And in that case, he himself didn't touch the dough.
Well, a child lives in the same house as the parents, and it's got to be kept home.
Well, so the point is, so Rashi, that's how Rashi learns. Rashi learns the child is only suffic tamei, as the Gemara is going to go on to point out, because children often play in areas where they become tamei. Tosfos refers to actually a brisa, a tosefta, that says that you often have, it's a little kid, we're talking about a little kid, who is, I was going to say soon, in Bodasli Shul, he's not even old enough to be asked what happened with you. So women are always picking him up and hugging him and kissing him, and some of those women are niggas, so he becomes tamei because of that.
That's if they come to the house.
Yeah, but his own mother may well be tamei, but also you have his sisters, his older sisters maybe tamei nida. Other women may come visit the house. He may be playing outdoors, whatever. So that's the difference. Rashi learns that the child definitely touched the dough, and the only question is whether the child was tamei. Tosfos learns the other way around. The child and other Rishonim also learn like that. There's no question that the child is tamei. The question is whether he actually touched the dough or anybody gave him a piece of it.
Well, anyway, you find dough in his hand, then obviously
no, because that's the thing. Somebody else could have taken a piece of it and given it to him.
From there, who maybe was tar, maybe
who it's much more likely was tar. If they know that it's tar, that it's truma dough, then a tummy person is not going to touch it willy nilly. Yeah. Keep in mind, I mean, we're not stopping talking about that some stranger off the street would have come in. They're not going to go. Right. They're not going to feel free to take a piece of the dough and give it to him. It would have to be some member of the household, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, so the point is, so we have a suffix now whether the dough became tummy. So Rav Meir Mitaher, Rav Meir says that the dough remains tahor. V'cham matamin, v'cham say it's tamei, mipnei shedarkish atinuk latapeach, because it's common for a child to be matapeach. Now, here also you have Rashi and Tosfos disagreeing what matapeach means. Rashi learns that matapeach means a child often plays in areas where there's garbage. And you also have, where there's garbage, there are going to be shrotzim. And where there are shrotzim, some of them are going to be dead, and they're matamin. So therefore, there's a high likelihood that since a child regularly plays in such things, in garbage heaps, then there's a high likelihood that at some point he touched a dead sheretz or a piece of one. Remember, only even a piece of one, only the size of a lentil, makes a person tummy.
But if he has this high that he's dead, he can be tummy, but why did the whole batch be...
Because if he touched the batch when he was taking the piece, then he made the whole rest of it tummy.
And someone gave it to him.
That's the thing. Rashi doesn't learn that there's that possibility. Rashi is learning that. So maybe that's why Rav Meir says it's tahor. But the Chachamim are saying since daukish al tinuk l'tapeach, and therefore we know, Rashi says we take it as a given that he took from the dough. We don't assume that somebody else gave it to him. So therefore we take it as a given that now the only question is he tamei or not? So the Chachamim say since daukish al tinuk l'tapeach, since he regularly plays in the garbage and in places where there are dead shrots, where there may be dead shrots in, then therefore there's a high likelihood he's tummy. And that's
only the parents, the mother's parents let him. But if he plays plays outside.
Pretty much just we're talking about a kid who's often playing unsupervised. We're not talking about the parents, the helicopter parents, and watching them constantly. You know, if they're watching them constantly, that's something else. Anyway, Tosfos again learns differently. The Dauk Shaltinuk L'Tapeach means it's common for a child to touch things that he's not supposed to. So the child is definitely tummy. But now the question is whether he took it from the dough or whether a person who was Tahor came and took a piece of the dough and gave it to him. So now the mayor is going to say we can assume that there was an Adam Tahor, and the Chacham are going to say Dauk Shaltinuk L'Tapeach means it's much more likely for the kid to touch things that he's not supposed to, in this case being the dough. So it's much more likely that he touched the dough and took a piece, so, and then he made the whole dough tummy.
He's not coming to suffix and he took a piece. He makes the whole sin
tough. Again, according to Rashi, it's a suffix whether he's tummy. According to Tosfos, it's a vadeh that he's tummy. If we knew that he was tummy, there's no question the dough is tummy.
Whole thing.
The whole thing, because when he touched it to remove a piece, then the whole thing becomes tummy. It's all one mess.
Can't cut around at that part.
No, doesn't work that way. So Bahavina. So now the Gemara continues. So now we have a discussion within that Mishnah. My time did a mayor. Why is your mayor not concerned that the dough might be tummy? And the reason is because some of the mayor, because your mayor holds like this. Roiv tinokas metapchin. It is true that most children are metapchin, meaning according to Rashi that they play around in the garbage, and according to Tosfos that they touch things they're not supposed to. All that's true. Umiot in metapchin. The fact is though, you have a miot who do not. And the Isa b'cheskas tara imedes. Now the dough itself has a cheskas tara to begin with. At one time, it was known to be tahor dough. Therefore, usmoich mi'uta l'chazaka. So when you combine together the miut plus the chazaka, itra le'ruba, then that weakens the roiv. That makes it less likely to say it is true that we have a roiv of children. But once we have together with the fact that we have a miut of children who don't, plus we have a chazaka on the dough, Rameo holds that combination of factors is strong enough to allow us to consider the dough tahor. Tosfos brings up a point over here also that the Tosfos calls, this is not a roiv choshuv, it's a roiv garua. It's not an important roiv, but rather a less important roiv. Now Tosfos doesn't elaborate why that is. Achronim explain, because the roiv we're talking about over here is not one that depends on natural forces, it's one that depends on somebody doing something. The child has to be metapeach in order to be part of the roiv. Well, very well, this child is not necessarily part of that roiv, and therefore so it's a statistical roiv. It's the kind the Gemara sometimes calls a ruba de lesse kamon. It's not where we have a roiv in front of us. It's just statistically, that's how things work. But this is in a way even weaker than a ruba de lesse kamon, because it depends on is this child one of the type to actually do that, to be metapeach. So therefore, Meir holds that combination of things is good enough. As far as the Rabbanon, they say miuta kamanda lesa. They say you have to ignore the miut. In general, we find in Shas in various places where Rav Meir is concerned about the miut and the Chachamim are not. Usually that comes out l'chumra, that because of a miut, Rav Meir is going to be concerned about certain possibilities. Tosfos refers to a case at the end of Yevamos where you have that, for example. We have other examples throughout Shas where we see Rav Meir chayish l'miuta. Here it comes out of kula as a result of it. Whereas the Chachamim say you can't really take notice of the miut. The fact is it's a miut, so therefore you ignore it. So you have to consider you have a roiv. Miut to command the lesser dummy. The Chachamim say the miut is considered as though it exists. The ruba chazaka ruba adif. So when you have a roiv of children who are metapeach versus a chazaka of the dough, then the roiv wins out. So therefore we have to assume the dough. Therefore we have to assume the dough is tummy. Now that we established that, now Omer Ish Lakish, or the Omer Ish Lakish, really, because this is a continuation of the previous part. Bishumra Boshia, Zuhi Shasofin Alasa Turban. So now the Shlokish tells us in the name of Rav Oshia, once we establish that the Chachamim say the dough is tamei, and we explain why they say that, then this would actually be one of those kinds of chazakas where, because of it, we would actually burn the Turban. So that's when the Chacham say Matamin, Rish Lakish says in the name of Rav Oshia, doesn't just mean that it's a suffix. It means we treat that truma as though it was Vadei Tomei and we burn it as Vadei Truma. So there, as Vadei Truma Tomei. So therefore we see, like Rav Yechon, like Rish Lakish was saying before, Sofen Ala Chazakas, that you can burn truma based on nothing more than a Chazaka. We don't have solid proof that this dough became Tomei, but nevertheless, we have a Chazaka, and Rish Lakish says that it's good enough for us to burn it.
That's the fact that we're talking about Solomon over here, they'll probably be extra careful that.
That may be, but nonetheless, the fact is the dough was left unattended, and now we see that a kid has a piece of it. So obviously something. So yeah, I mean, it's true. If it was Joe that was supposed to be kept to her, yes, somebody should have been watching it the whole time. Obviously, they would. They fell asleep on the job or whatever. That's not the point. Is that this is the situation we have? Anyway,
so you can't sell it.
You can't sell it. Nothing. The only thing you can do with Truma Tomei, you can say the only thing you can do with Truma Tomei is you can ruin it as though it was firewood. So yeah, so at least you get some hana out of it. The Rashi and Tosfos argue elsewhere in Shas whether you'd be allowed to feed it to an animal, whether that's the fact, whatever. Anyway, so that's Rish Lakish. On the other hand, as we said, Rabbi Yechon Roma, Ein Zu Chazaka Shasofen Alas Truma. On the other hand, Rabbi Yechon says, no, that's not the kind of Chazaka that you burn on that you burn Truma because of it. He would say that no. When the Chachamim say metamin, they don't mean it's absolutely tame. They just mean toilin. You have to suspend it. You can't eat it. You can't burn it until one of two things happens. Either, or one of three things. Either it becomes vadai tame, and then you burn it. Or it spoils, and then you can also burn it. Or you wait till Erev Pesach, and it's chametz, and then you also burn it. So one way or the other, eventually you'll...
The kid can tell you where you got to...
What? Or... If the kid can tell you, yeah, I suppose maybe that also, yeah. Okay. And Rabbi Yochanan continues. Ella ezu chazaka the Rabbi Yochanan sofen alas a truma. Okay, so what kind of chazaka would Rabbi Yochanan agree is good enough to burn truma? So that would be kedetznan. That would be like we learn in another mishnah. Now this next one we're going to quote is not actually a mishnah, but rather a braisa. So on the side here it says maybe it should be kedetanya. Although the Rashba points out a general rule that we can keep in mind for many such Gemaras, he says often when the Gemara quotes a Braisa, which is very strongly based on a Mishnah, then therefore the Gemara can introduce it with Ditnan. So even though it is a Braisa technically, and it's not part of the Mishnah, but because he says the Isle Iker B'Mishnah, it has like there's a source for what it's saying in the Mishnah, then the Gemara can introduce it with the word Tanan. Anyway, so we have the following Braisa. Issa b'soy chabayis. If you have again a batch of dough in the house, ushrotzim utzfaudei metaplin sham. You have shrotzim as well as frogs that are wandering around over there. And Rashi explains metaplin sham means not only they're crawling around, but pieces of them are falling off. Now a frog is not one of the shmona shrotzim, but you have some of the other shmona shrotzim resemble frogs. In fact, the first one in the list. The second one, the list Hatzav, Rashi translates it on the pasuk. He gives a French word for it, and he says Shadoimel Tzvardeya. It resembles a frog. So Bapashtus Rashi means a toad. The actual word that the actual French word that Rashi uses is not quite so clear in present day prints, but it seems that Rashi is referring to a toad. A toad is a separate species. They're related to frogs, but there are differences. In particular, frogs usually have smooth skin. Toads have scaly and wrinkled skin, whatever, there's differences. And according to that, toad would be one of the Shemona Shrotzim. But even if not, the point is, there are some of the Shemona Shrotzim that superficially resemble frogs in some way. They're both little creatures. If you see a little creature crawling around, you may not notice on first glance which one it is. Anyway, the point is, here you have that both of them, pieces are falling off of them as they're crawling around. And a piece of a sheretz is going to be a tame. So therefore, if a piece of a sheretz lands on the dough, it's going to be tame. If a piece of a frog lands on the dough, it won't be tame. So then we say the braisa says later on we find pieces of these creatures in the dough, and we don't know whether those pieces are from the frogs or from the shrotzim. We would probably say nowadays just throw out the whole dough. The whole thing is disgusting. But, you know, back then, I guess people weren't as picky. Anyway, it's expensive after all. Yeah. Anyways, so the Braisa says, Im roiv shrotzim tmeya. If most of the creatures in the house are shrotzim, then the dough is tame. Im roiv tzfaudim tahara. If most of them are frogs, then it's tahar. So now Rabbi Yochanan is saying, this is the kind where if we have a suffix about it, now the difference is, now we have a stronger chazaka, because now we have, the house itself has a chazaka that there are shruts in it. So therefore, so now we have, so Rashi says, we have a chazaka plus a ruba de isay kamon, because we have a chazaka that the house is full of shrotzim, and we have ruba de isay kamon, namely, we have a roiv that we could actually count. If we were to go and count the number of creatures that are in the house, we would find that there are actually more shrotzim than tzfarim. As opposed to the case with the child and the doe is a chazaka plus a ruba de lesse kamon. We don't have a roiv in front of us that we know that this child touched shrotzim or touched the doe or not. It's a statistical one that most children touch things and a miut doesn't. So therefore, so this is a much stronger kind of chazaka, a much stronger kind of suffix, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan would say that's good enough reason to actually burn the terumah. And the Gemara says, Tanya Kavasei de Rabbi Yochanan. In fact, we learn a Braisa like, and by the way, Tosfos points out, again, another point is that this roiv is a strong roiv, because unlike the roiv we said with the child, which is only a roiv garua, because the child, this particular child, may not necessarily be one of the ones who touches, here we have a roiv involving natural things. We have shrotzim and tzfarim around here, right? So Tanya Kavasei de Rabbi Yochanan. In fact, we learn a Braisa like what Rabbi Yochanan says. The Braisa says, Shnei Dvorim Ein Bahem Das Lishoel. Now we have like this. One of the rules of Sofik Tuma is, now where do we learn the whole concept of Sofik Tuma when we say it's Tavar? We learn it from the Soita. Because a Soita, there's a Yochid, it's one-on-one, and we say Miss Sofik, she's Tavar. And therefore we have Birshus HaYochid versus Birshus HaRabim. Now we also have a rule in it called Ein by Das Lishoel versus Yesh by Das Lishoel, meaning the Soita is a grown woman. We can ask her what happened. She can tell us. Now, she may tell us that she's not Tomei. We can't necessarily believe her. We have to go through the whole Soita process to establish it. But we can ask her what happened, and she would have the ability to tell us one way or the other. So therefore, we learn from that when do we say Sofek Tumah versus a Yochid is Tomei? Only if Yesh by Das Lishoel, only if we're talking about a person who has the Das to be asked what happened. And he may say, I'm not sure, for example. But as opposed to a little kid, like we're talking about before, involving the doe, is ein bo das lishol. Similarly, animals are ein bo das lishol, kalim, etc. So usually we say, when ein bo das lishol, then we say that a suffolk tumor, even b'rishos ha-yochid, is tahor. It's tahor, even though it's b'rishos ha-yochid, but because ein bo das lishol, most cases we say that a suffolk is going to be tahor because ein bo das lishol. So we have a suffix, for example, did a certain keli become tomei? For example, you have a keli sitting there in your chotzer, and you don't know whether a sheretz touched it or not. Then when your chotzer is a rosh hashayachid, or your house, let's say, is a rosh hashayachid, but since the keli is ein bar das lishol, then we can assume it's tahor. However, the Braisa says, shnei dvarim ein bahem das lishol. There are two cases when ein bahem das lishol, v'asom chachomim kemashi yesh bahem das lishol. The chachomim treated it as though they have Das Lishol and declared them Tomei because of a suffix in Rosh HaSeyachim. Tinek v'oid acheres. One is the case of a child, and the other one is another one. So Tinek kodam moran, the one with the child, is what we just said. And again, so we're going to say, we consider that Yesh Bam Das Lishol, therefore we apply the usual rule of Suffolk Tumah Rosh HaSeyachid, and we say, therefore, that the dough, we can't burn the dough, because we don't know it's Tomei Vadei, but we can be toilet. And the other one is Acheres, V'oid Acheres, Ma'ihi. What is the other one? Is a case like this. Another case involving dough. Isa b'seich habayis, you have a batch of dough of truma in the house. V'tarnigolim u'mashkin tmeim shom. You have in that house, there are also chickens, and there are also liquids that are tame. Now, if the liquids touch the dough, they're going to make it tame. Now, v'nimtzu nikurim v'isa. Later on, we come back, and we find that there are marks of pecking in the dough. So obviously, at some point, one of the chickens went and pecked at the dough to eat a little bit of it. So now the question is, the chickens themselves are not tomei. No living creatures can ever become tomei except for people. So there's no question, the chickens themselves is not the problem. The question is, maybe did the chickens drink some of the mashkin tmeim and then, with their beaks still wet, go and peck at the dough? It doesn't matter, it's a minimum. There's no minimum shear that you need for mashkin tmeim to make something tomei. So therefore, that's the problem. So the Braisa says, toilin, we have to suspend that truma. Loy oichlin v'loy surfer. We can't eat it, we can't burn it. So that's another example where even though Ein Bo Das Lishol, because after all, you can't ask the chickens what happened, nevertheless, we treat it as though Yesh Bo Das Lishol, and say, therefore, that therefore we say that the dough is Suffolk Tummy. Usually we would have said, even though it's in Rosh Hashanah Yachid, it would have been Tahor because Ein Bo Das Lishol, but in this case, we say this is one of those cases where we say Sveika Tummy. So therefore, we see what Rabbi Yochanan was saying before, that there is, now, when it came to the case of the Shrotzim and the Tzfardim, there we say that was a much stronger kind of roi, and therefore we say that's enough to even burn Truma. But the two cases we see, like Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that the case of the child and the case of the chickens is both Turban. We suspend the Truma, we don't burn it, but we don't eat it either. So there is, it does actually mention in a Mishnah in Masechta Taharos, it's true. It does depend how far the water is, because yeah, if the water is far away, then we can assume that the Mishnah talks about over there more not just the distance, but also what kind of animal are we talking about. Why are we mentioning dafka chickens? You could have conceivably there's an animal in the house, the same thing, because the Mishnah discusses over there different kinds of animals have different habits as far as after they've drunk. Whether they wipe their mouth sort of before, so that with certain kinds of animals, there's a possibility by the time they reach the dough, then their mouth is already dry. They already dried off their mouth by eating something else or whatever by rubbing their mouth against something else, and therefore it's not tummy. So yeah, that factors in as well. However, now the Gemara says, by the way, in connection with this din with the chickens, it depends. All of this would apply only when the liquids are white or clear. So now if the chicken it drank some of the water and now with a wet beak went and pecked at the dough, you wouldn't be able to tell because it's clear, it's a clear liquid, and you wouldn't be able to tell any trace of it on the dough. But he says if it's red liquid, then if it pecked at the dough with a wet beak, you would know it because you would see some of the red on the surface of the dough. However, the Gemara asks, the Duma Blatinu Issa, why? You could have that the chicken pecked at the dough with a wet beak, where it was wet with red liquids, and now it got absorbed into the dough, and therefore you don't see the color on the surface. So how do you have a proof from that? So in fact, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Dover Zeshom Biribi, or Bishom Biribi, which means a great Talmud Chacham, in this case, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Rashi explains over here and in other places in Shas, that Biribi means Gadol Hadur, the greatest person in the generation. So he heard the statement that there's a difference between white and red, or Pirusha Leshoma, but he didn't hear the reason behind it. He didn't hear not the reason so much, but the explanation. He should have explained that within white versus red, there is in fact a difference. What is it? Lo shana olav mashkin tzlulin. The difference really is even within one color versus another, it depends. Was the liquid clear? And how do we define clear? Shabavoya shaltinek nikarba, where you would be able to see the reflection of a child or of anybody else for that matter in the water. When the water or any liquid is that clear, even we're talking about a red liquid, yes, there is a possibility that it got absorbed into the dough and you don't see any of it on the surface. Therefore, we have to assume the dough is tummy, or at least we have to be toiling. On the other hand, avamashkim achurim, but if it's cloudy liquids, which are so cloudy that you can't see a reflection of a person in them, loy, then we wouldn't say there's a problem, because then if the chicken pecked at the dough with some of that liquid on its beak, we would see some of the residue of it on the surface of the dough, and if we don't, then we can assume, then we have every reason to believe that by the time the chicken pecked at the dough, its beak was already dry.
Even if it's wet, it's such a minimum that it dries up so very quick.
That's true, but if it's achorim, if it's cloudy liquid, then it means there's going to be some residue of it. There's going to be some the water may evaporate, the water in it may evaporate, but you're still going to have whatever was dissolved in the water is going to be on the surface over there, and therefore you'd be able to see it. So if you don't see it, then we're good. So the difference is not, in other words. So there's two ways of explaining it. Really, do we mean that do we mean that white liquids, it's always going to be tame because you may not see any residue. And when it comes to red liquids, we have to distinguish between clear and cloudy ones. For example, let's say you have clear red wine, which is clear enough to see a reflection in, versus cloudy red wine, maybe which is not. Or is it that the Rambam learns that Rabbi Yochanan is arguing on Rabbi Shimon Levi and saying it's really no difference of the color, it's only a difference of the consistency of the liquid. Now, from here, the next few Mishnayos are going to deal with Dinim of Yichud. So now that we've spent much of the Masechta talking about Dinim of Kiddushin, and ultimately after Kiddushin, you're going to have a marriage and the husband and wife are going to be together. So now we have to talk about the Din that an unrelated man and woman are not allowed to be together. So we're going to talk about all those Din. The Mishnah says, Lo yisyachad Adam im shtei noshim. A man is not allowed to be alone together with two women. Because, as the Gemara is going to say, noshim daitim kalos, women are very easily distracted, and so therefore you may have that he may seduce both of them, or one of them, and then the other one will cover up for her. So therefore you can't do that. Avol isha achas misyachedisim shnei noshim, but one woman is allowed to be together with two men because they'd be embarrassed of each other. Now we're going to see in the Gemara, it's actually not so simple. We're going to distinguish in the Gemara between different categories of men in terms of how careful they are with dinei tznius. You do in fact have a halacha that says that if the men are prutzim, then even two is not enough. So you have it gets complicated. Nowadays we have to assume many people are prutzim, and therefore we can't necessarily have yichud of two men with one woman either. Reb Shimon Omer. Reb Shimon says, even one man can be alone with two women as long as his wife is with him, because his wife will prevent him from doing anything. She's gonna see to it that he's not gonna be mezana with any of these women. Now Tosfos discusses that. Reb Shimon would say that Reb Shimon would agree that you still can't have that. Tosfos says what Reb Shimon means is, in other words, if you have three women over there, two other women plus his wife, then it'll be mutter. But just to have one woman together with his wife, Tosfos says it sounds like it would be ulcer. So then Tosfos discusses in the light of a different Gemara in Avodah Zarah that implies differently. So Tosfos says that no, Reb Shimon is saying only when ein ishta imoy, then it's also. But Reb Shimon and the Chachamim would say that it's allowed with one other woman and his wife. And in fact, Tosfos discusses different girsois over here. Hagros Agro actually has a long arichos over here and he starts out by saying a very, very sharp thing. He says the girsa of Tosfos and Rif is not correct. He says in the girsa that they have in our Mishnah, which puts the Bizman Sheishter Imay as part of Reb Shimon's statement. So he explains that, so he goes and explains that actually the Ishtar Ime is really referring back to the Chachamim, that even the Chachamim is saying that even the Chachamim are talking about when Ishtar Ime. So you have different opinions on the subject, in short. continues the Mishnah. The Yoshin Imahim Pundiki, and in fact, when a man's wife is with him, they can even all, there can be other women with them, and they're sleeping all together in an inn, because his wife is going to watch him and make sure that he doesn't fool around with them, says Reb Shimon. continues the Mishnah. Now, a man is allowed to be in Yichud with his mother or with his daughter. As far as a sister is an interesting thing, the Mishnah does not mention a sister, and there is in fact some discussion about that. After all, we're going to say a man is not allowed to be alone with any arayas, and an erva sister is certainly an erva. It's true that Anshik Nes Sagdala took away the Yetzirah for close relatives, but nevertheless, you still have the concern. L'maisa, the poskim say that the poskim discuss in some detail a brother and sister are allowed to be alone in yichud on a temporary basis. But for example, they can't live alone together for long periods of time. Reb Moshe, for example, has an interesting tshuva on the subject where he says, say for example, a couple has only one boy and one girl. So most of the time, there's not a problem. Most of the time, the parents are home. So so therefore, there's no problem. If you have, let's say, he says, if the parents are going to be going away for a few weeks on a trip or something, then they should make sure that there's a chaperone staying at home with so that the brother and sister are not alone. But other than that, then he also says, b'chlal, let's say, for example, what if a brother is boarding with his sister, for example, or the other way around. So he says, basically, it really depends on how it's set up. If it's set up that he might leave any time or she might leave any time, then that's considered bakrai and sort of thing would be allowed. But if they're making a clear sevet, then not. Okay, continues the Mishnah. The Yoshin Imoim B'kiru Basar. Not only is a man allowed to be in Yichud with his mother or with his daughter, because again, a person doesn't normally have it's not just the fact that a person doesn't usually have a taiva for them because of the Anshet Nes Sagdola. The Gemara is actually going to bring a hint from a posuk for the fact that from a posuk in Chumash that a man is allowed to be in Yichud with his mother. So even before the Anshet Nes Sagdola, usually it was assumed, at least as far as a mother, that a normal person doesn't have a taiva for his mother. You have the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, for example, that Oman, one of the later kings of Yehuda, was Mezana with his mother, and she says to him, he was even out and out Roshi, terrible Averis, and his mother says to him, I mean, do you even have a Hanav, was it a thing? And he says, I'm only doing it Lahachas. So yeah, so anyway. So a man can be alone with his mother or with his daughter, and the Yoshin Imam, the Kiru Basar, and in fact, they're even allowed to sleep skin touching skin.
In those days,
yeah, it was a very common thing to do. It would help warm each other up. Yeah. You have a pasuk in Kehelas that says, Yishkan Ushnaim, Bacham Lahem. If two people lie together in a bed, they'll be warm. Ola Echad, Echi Echam. You have one person sleeping by himself. How's he supposed to warm up? Because, yeah, body heat, where they would help, they would warm each other up with their body.
Unfortunately, during the 50-60 years ago, my grandmother told me that they stayed alive because they were
there were during the Holocaust and the barracks. Yeah, you had examples like that, but even not under such conditions, even in the olden times, it was more common that people would sleep together for warmth. Yeah. Anyway, however, the Mishnah continues. However, the Mishnah continues. The imhik dulu, once they grow old enough. Then each one of them has to sleep in their own clothing. They can sleep in the same bed still, the mother and daughter, the mother and son, or the father and daughter, but they have to be clothed. They can't be skin-to-skin contact anymore. Later on, by the way, at the end of the parak, Rashi explains that a man is not allowed to be in Yichud even with many women. Tosfos disagrees and says, again, similar to the Tosfos over here, that it's really only a problem with two women, unless the Mishnah later on is talking about, particularly you have a person that iskoyim anoshim, you have certain kinds of men who do business that involves women a lot, like selling women's items or whatever, perfumes or whatever, but regular men, Tosfos learns, would be allowed to be in Yichud with three women. Anyway, so the Gemara starts off. My timer, why is there this issue of Yichud even with two women? On the face of it, or isn't there one of the women will blab on the other? And the answer is, like we said, Tonet Ve'elio, Hurvan Noshim Daitan Kalis, because Noshim Daitan Kalis, and it's very easy to distract them and very easy to be mafata them, and then you have problems. He might actually be mafata both of them, he might be mafata one and the other one will be quiet or whatever, yeah, so yeah. Okay, the Gemara continues, where do we know this concept of yichud in the first place? Now, by the way, you have two different kinds of yichud. You have yichud with a woman who's actually osur to him min haTorah, and then you have yichud with a pnuya. The first kind is what the Gemara is going to be dealing with over here: the fact that this woman is osur to him min haTorah, and therefore he's not allowed to be in yichud with her. The concept of yichud pnuya, that you're not allowed to be alone with an unmarried girl, that came later. That came in the time of David HaMelech, when you have the story of Amnon and Tamar, where they were biologically half brother and sister, because both of them, their father was David. She was born from Yifas Toya, so she wasn't considered born Jewish, she was a Gioris. Anyway, you have the whole story over there where Amnon lured her into his house and raped her. So after that, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the Chachamim made the Takana of the Chachamim of David's times, then made the Takana of Isur Yichud with a Pnuya as well. Before then, it was only with relatives or an Esh HaSeish or whatever. Anyway, so Manohanimili, where do we know that there's this issue of Yichud, but that there's an exception for a mother? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Meshum Rabbi Shmuel, Remez Yichud Ben HaTorah Minayin. Where is there a hint in the for Yichud in the Torah? Now, there's a machlokas we've shown him when we're saying it's a hint. Does that mean, nevertheless, it isn't Isur Daraisa, or do we mean it's an Isur Darabonon, and this is basically only an Asmat? Anyway, so where do we know this from? Shenema, the pasuk says, Ki Yisischa Achicha Ben Imach. The pasuk says about the mitzvah that you have, that you can have a mesis, a person who convinces somebody to worship Avodah Zarah, where the Torah says you're not allowed to listen to him and you have to bring him to Beis Din and have him executed, etc. So the pasuk introduces it by saying, if your mother, the son of your, if your brother, the son of your mother, tries to convince you to worship Avodah Zarah, and then it lists a few other relatives in the pasuk as well. It mentions your son, your daughter, your wife, or your friend. Anyway. What would only a son, would only a maternal brother, where you have a mother in common, would he be mesis ben av ein mesis, and a brother from the same father would not? Why is the Mishnah, why is the pasuk rather saying the word ben imecha instead of just achicha? So the reason is ela loy malach. So it comes to hint to you as follows: ben siyachad ima, a son is allowed to be in yichud with his mother. Therefore, in other words, another son of that same mother is more likely to be there as well, and therefore he's more likely to be. Now, sasa usually happens in secret. The pasuk itself uses the word basaser in secret. So in other words, because nobody's going to go do that in public because they know they're going to get in deep trouble. So what is it? So this woman has sons from two different husbands. She has a son Reuven from one husband and a son Yosef from another. Reuven is allowed to be in yichud with his mother. Therefore, it's more likely that Yosef, at some point, her son from another husband, is going to be there as well, and Yosef might try to talk Reuven into worshiping Avodah Zarah. So we have a hint from that a son can be in Yichud alone with his mother, because otherwise there's no way that they would be in secret together like this. But also, you're not allowed to be in Yichud with any other Arayas in the Torah. So that gives us the exception for the son and the mother, and therefore also, by extension, the father and the daughter, but that's it. The Pnei Yeshua actually has an interesting explanation. He says, I mean, this is a little bit of a doichet to say, because you're mentioning Beni Mecha, that means you're allowed to be in Yichud with his mother. He says, actually, what the Gemara is learning is like this. In all that catalog of relatives that it mentioned in the Pasuk, it mentions your brother, your son, your daughter, your wife. It's missing your sister. Why does it mention if your sister tries to be basis you to Avodah Zarah? That hints at the point, says Pnei Yeshua, because a brother and a sister are not allowed to be in Yichud together. And that applies to Kol Arayis to Batur. So therefore, there's less of a possibility that his sister might try to be Mesis him. Okay, the Gemara says, Pashtu Dikra B'Ma'aseh. Let's look at what is the pshat of the Pasuk. So we have a remez from this Pasuk then that a man is allowed to be in Yichud with his mother, but not with any other Arayis. What is the pshat of the Pasuk? Why is it mentioning your brother from your mother? So I'm going to buy a Loi Miboya Karma, because the Pasuk is telling us one of these things needless to say. Loi Miboya Ben Av. Needless to say, that you shouldn't listen to a son of your father, of a paternal brother. Needless to say, you would know not to listen to him. Just sonny lay, because after all, he may not like you. Because after all, you're his rival for the Yerusha. You and he eventually are going to be yaushening your father's Yerusha together. So if you're only half brothers, then he's only ben avicha, then he's more likely to not have your best interest in mind. He would rather see that you're out of the picture so that he can get more of a Yerusha for himself. So therefore, needless to say, but obviously, etzis rois, so he's more likely to give bad advice, so you would know not to listen to him. El afilu ben ein, even a brother from your mother, Deloy Sonile, he has nothing against you because you're not in line to Yaushin the same Yerusha. You're each going to be Yaushin from your respective fathers. Amatsaisile, so you would think maybe you should listen to him. Maybe what he's telling you is good advice. And therefore, Kamash Malam, therefore the Pasuk is telling you that no, realize that what he's telling you is bad advice. Don't even think to listen to him. As it continues in the Pasuk. Okay. So that's the pshat of the Pasuk, why it says Ben. Now, the Gemara says, Neima masnisin deloy ka Abashol. Do we have to say that our Mishnah is not like Abashol when our Mishnah says that a man is not allowed to be alone with two women, where it seems that Abashol says different? Namely, a braisis detanya, kol shlut, now a baby, eventually a child grows up enough that if Rahman al-Tlai passes away, then you're going to have a full levaya for him. But when a baby is young, then you don't have a full-fledged levaya. So a braisa says, kol shloshim yoim, if a baby Rachman Otzlan dies within 30 days, Yotze b'cheik, you take him out in the bosom, meaning you don't have an actual mitter, you don't have an actual mitter or anything like that, or an oren or anything like that for him. You just somebody just carries him in their arms. V'nikba b'isha achas u'shnei anoshim. Who goes to the burial? You can have one woman and two men, meaning you don't have to have a full crowd for the levaya. It's enough to have three people. On the other hand, but you cannot have one man and two women because of the problem of yichud. And Abba Shol says you could have one man and two women. So it sounds like Abba Shol would disagree with our Mishnah and say that yichud is allowed between one man and two women. The answer is no. Afilotema Abba Shol. No, you could say that our Mishnah even goes maybe like Abba Shol because b'shas aninus tovu yitzre. Because at the time of aninus, when they're sad over the baby died, then the Yetzahara is broken, and therefore they're less likely to commit znus. V'rabbanan, what would the Chachamim answer to that, who disagree even in that case? They would say, on the contrary, savri lak Rabbi Yitzchak. They hold like what Rabbi Yitzchak said. The Amr Rabbi Yitzchak says, let's look at a posuk in Eicha. The posuk says, ma yis'oinen odem choy gever al-chatav. Now, the simple meaning of yis'oinen is complain. Why should a person complain? Why should a person complain as long as he's alive and say that that Hashem is causing things to happen to him that he doesn't like so much? Gever achatov, a person should realize that he has lots of averus, so therefore he may deserve what's coming to him. But the Chachamim are darshin yisoinen meloshin aninus, meloshin mourning. Afilu b'shas aninus shel adam yitzrim isgaber olav. Even when a person is in a state of aninus, then his yetzahara still tries to overpower him. In other words, they take out the pasuk, ma yis'oinen odem choy, what good is aninus? You would think that at least aninus does good and that it weakens his yetzahara. No, even in a time like that, gever achatov, he better overcome his chatoim, or else his yetzahara is going to get the better of him. So therefore, the Chachamim say, even in a time like that, when there's a levaya for a little kid, then you still can't have yichud. The Abba Shol. Now, what does Abba Shol answer to that? How does he explain the pasuk? He says, the pasuk means what we explained in Pshat. It means the pasuk is talking about a person who's complaining about what Hashem does for him. So the pasuk is saying, how can a person be misonin as in complaining about his averus? Is he a master over his chatoim? Can he guarantee that he hasn't done any averus and he's living because he did and he has life and everything because he deserves it? You should realize the very fact that he's alive itself is a big gift from Hashem, and therefore he has nothing to complain about. So therefore, Abba Shol says the pasuk is not talking about what happens, how a person feels in a state of aninus. The pasuk is telling us a musar derasha, don't think when things that happen that don't seem to be so good, don't start complaining against Hashem. Mm-hmm. Realize that you owe the Eibishter a lot more than he owes you. So and the Gemara says v'rabbanan. Now, what are the Chachamim answer for that? And they say, the fact is, we can give you an example where even at a time of aninus, even you want to say, like you, Abba Shol, are saying, Togu Yitzre, fine, maybe a person's Yetzirah to a certain extent is broken at such a time. Fine, what if there's no aninus over there? What if they're faking it? There was a case with a certain woman, there was a story where they took him out. Now, what does that mean? Rashi gives two explanations. One is that they pretended that a baby was dead and took it out as though there was going to be a levaya, and really, they were doing it in order to have an opportunity to commit znus. So therefore, the Chacham was saying to Abba Shol, you're saying when there's aninus, a person's yetzahara is broken. Fine, but what if there's no aninus? What if they're faking the whole thing? That's one explanation, Rashi says. Then Rashi brings another explanation, is that it's not v'rabbanon and it's not da'ahu ovdav da'ava ovdav apikdei, but rather that this line, ki'ahu ma'itzadahi itza, is a continuation of Abba Shol's statement. Abba Shol is saying, don't complain against Hashem because you should realize you owe Hashem a lot. For example, we have a case of Ahi Itza of a certain woman where one of her, the Rashi refers to a Gemara in Moed Katan, So now the Gemara tells us over there, there's a limit how much mourning a person should do when their relative passes away. You have 3 days, that's a normal time for crying, seven for Shiva, then you have Shloshim and 12 months, etc. But a person should not go and then be excessively mourning more than that, because then it's like showing that he doesn't agree with Hashem's judgment. So therefore, so the Gemara tells a story over there. Now he says that according to one Girsa, that's what the Gemara means over here. There was a woman whose son passed away, and she was in total grief over it, much more than expected. And then people were telling her that you know what? I mean, you have to eventually accept Hashem's judgment, and she didn't. And then the result of that is another one of her children passed away, and so forth, until all of them, because she never accepted Hashem's judgment. So Tosfos also refers to that over here and says that's another explanation. So Abishol is saying, the Pasuk is saying, my disownin adam koi, what are the person complaining as long as he's alive about how Hashem is treating him? He should realize, Geberach HaTov, does he think that he has master over his Averis and he hasn't committed Averis? A person has to accept the judgment of Hashem, as you see from the example of this woman who does not, and Rahman al-Islam, tragedies happen. Tosfos themselves brings a different girsa but a different explanation from Rabbeinu Hananel with the words in the Gemara over here. Ha'i itza to have a obdavah pikdei. So Rashi had said it means that they pretended that a baby was dead and really it was alive, and they took it out to be mezan. Tosfos brings a different other explanation. Happened once, there was a woman whose husband had passed away, and she's by his caver over there, and she's crying profusely. Meanwhile, there was a nearby over there, there was a man who had been hanged by order of the government, and there was somebody there watching the body to make sure that the relatives don't steal it away or something. Anyway, so now this guard decides he has an opportunity to get it on with the Salmana. So he convinces her, and then they go off, they do their thing. He comes back, he doesn't find the body over there. Uh-oh, now he's in trouble. Now he was supposed to be guarding this body to make sure they don't steal it away, and he slacked off on the job and went to do something else. So the woman tells him, you know what? Go unbury my husband's body from his grave and hang it up there instead of that, and that way you won't get in trouble. So we see that even in a time of aninus, she's so sad over her husband, but nevertheless she's willing to sacrifice him for this kind of thing. So that's another example where even it's a weird story, but the point is, in other words, even at a time of aninus, even in a time of avelos, you can have people do things like that in order to cover up for their avelos. So therefore, the Chachamim are saying that based on that, then you can't just say that any time there's a Leviathan, there's not going to be a problem with Yetzer Hara, even then there might be, because we see even this woman, her husband was in fact dead, and she's crying for him, and nevertheless she was seduced into Aveira and so forth.
So you don't see that they're so mapped, like
it's true. Says so maybe the Taka should be more mapped. There are places, I think, where they have a minute that women don't go to a Leviathan at all because of these kinds of considerations. So yeah. So now the Gemara continues a little bit. The Mishnah had said Avol Isha Achas. We said one woman is allowed to be alone with two men, but the Gemara says it depends. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Lo Shana El B'Ksherim. That applies only if these men are kosher. They're not choshered on things involving znus or arayis. Avol B'Prutzim. But when they're people who are not so careful about such things, then even 10 men, a woman, even 10 prutzim, a woman wouldn't be allowed to be with. In fact, have a mice of Otsio Asora Mamita. In fact, at one time happened that 10 men carried out one woman in a mita, pretending that she was dead in order to be able to have a chance for znus. And the Gemara says, Amr Rabbi Yosef, Teda, you can prove this, that many times people who do Averis are not embarrassed of one another as long as they're all in the Avera together. The Mechabri Be'a sort of a Gandhi Kshura, it can happen. For example, what if people want to steal a beam? A beam is a heavy thing. One person can't carry it by himself. 10 people may join together to steal it. And they're not embarrassed of one another. So you see that when it comes to people collaborating to do an Avera, then they're not embarrassed of each other. Well, the Gemara says, name a Messiah. Should we say that the following Mishnah from Sota supports what Rav is saying? The Mishnah talks over there about a Sota. We know that the Sota is also to have relations with her husband from when she becomes a Sota until she drinks the May Sota. Right, so the Mishnah says, Moistrin lo shnei tamar chachamim, they give him two tamar, the local based it gives him two tamar chachamim to travel along with them, shema yovei aleha baderech, because otherwise he might have relations with her on the way. And the point is, not only is that osur, but also it would prevent the mei sota from working. The mei sota will not work if they had a via asura like that, and therefore it's going to call it that the name of Hashem is going to be erased for nothing. So that's going to be motzi laz. So apparently tamar chachamim ein in shadal meloi. So apparently it has to davka be tamar chachamim, not just regular people. So that would bear out Rab's point. Regular people might be prutzim. Tamar chachamim we can assume are kshevim, and therefore we see that therefore it's allowed with three. Like Moses says, no. Shiny tamar chachamim. No, there's a different reason why tamar chachamim are different. Why we send along davka tamar chachamim? They will know to give him. They will know to give masra to warn him. You should know if you have relations with her any time during this trip, then the water will not work, and the remotzi laz and remotzi causing shame shemayim to be erased for nothing, etc. So therefore, they're capable of giving him that warning, whereas regular amei oritz might not know of that, or he might not believe them, etc. So therefore, that would be a reason for tamar chachamim doesn't necessarily prove Rab's point about kshedim versus prutzim. So the Gemara continues a little bit. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav lo shanu el ve'ir. Furthermore, this rule about a woman being allowed to be alone with two men who are kshedim is only in the city. But if it's on the road, then there have to be at least three. And for that matter, then Amar brings in Shulchan Aruch that by night also, even in the city, two are not enough. You would need a minimum of three. And again, they'd have to be kshedim, not prutzim. So one, what's wrong on the road with two? Shemi yitzdarech echan so av baderech ad shiyu shloisha. Shemi yitzdarech echan man lahashdim, because one of them might have to go to the bathroom, or Rashi has a bit of a different gerusa than the cover. He may have to go for a while. Which in that case he has to go far away for tznius. V'nimsa echan misyachanim erva, and then you have one man alone with an erva, and that's no good.
So maybe because the one person goes away, it could be what do you call them?
Robbers?
No, like not malachim. It could be, we used to have those days that had a quiet place. They had,
Shadim? That's something else. That's true. There may be an issue with Shadim, but we're not focusing on that over here. But we're focusing on that if one of them has to go. So the gear that we have in the mission of a hashtim urinate would mean even if it's for only a short amount of time. The gear said that Rashi has the nekavav would imply that he has to go for gerlam, which may take a while. And in particular, not only it may take a while, but also he has to go further away so people don't see his uncovered skin, as the Gemara tells us in Baruchas. So yeah. So the Gemara says, name a Messiah. Like, again, can we say that we can support what Rav says from that same Mishnah in Sota? Why do they have to give him two Tamar Chachamim to go with them so he doesn't have relations with her on the way? Why? Apparently because you have to have two Tamar Chachamim plus him for a total of three. So that would show Rav's point that on the road you need at least three. But the Gemara says that's not a solid proof. The reason you need two Tamar Chachamim is to be eidos against him. In case he does have relations with her, they can testify in front of Beis Din, and that way they won't go through with the whole Sota process. That doesn't necessarily prove that you need three on the road. Nevertheless, we haven't schlugged up Rav either, and the halacha is in fact like that.
That's
so you need a minimum. So when it's prutzim, then there's no that when it's right, prutzim, then no number helps really. When it's ksherim, then if it's in the city and during the day, then two are enough. If it's by night or if it's on the road, then you need three. And you also have the din that we mentioned in our Mishnah about ishto imo, where many times if a man's wife is together with him, then that's enough to mitigate the issue of yichud. And we're going to talk about in the Gemara tomorrow about various dinim with that, Pesach Pasuach and other such things like that.
I would say by day, in a way, by day, it's more serious because by day you can see a person if you have to go further away.
That's true. But on the other hand, that's...
And then you can't see the doctor, the light.
Well, that's why we're saying the city versus the road. If we're in the city, then he doesn't necessarily have to go that far away. But whatever. In the city, there's lots of people around, so therefore there's less of an issue in the first place. Yeah. Okay. Shukriya, everyone. Yeah.